Hey, Crispin here on the North Shore Vineyard Church audio podcast. Today on the podcast, we have audio from our service on Sunday, October 2nd, 2011. And this is part four of our series we've been in called Rhythm, Rest, and Rejoicing. A couple of weeks ago, I did a message called Living with Margin. And today's message is called Loving with Margin. How can we set aside more space, time, resources in our lives for others who are in need? Don't forget, we got all kinds of fun stuff coming up with the church in the next few weeks. On October 15th, we're going to be doing Fall for Art on Saturday evening. Doing a block party in downtown Covington. Art gallery showing, live music, all kinds of fun things. And then that following weekend, we're going to be doing our first annual North Shore Vineyard Smoking Hot Chili Cook-Off. So lots of fun. Check out our website for more details, northshorevineyard.org. All right, let's head to the talk. Thanks for listening. North Shore Vineyard, downtown Covington.
In this series, kind of off and on, it's been interrupted by various special messages and a guest speaker last week, but after 6 weeks, we made it to part four, and this is a little series we've been in called Rhythm, Rest, and Rejoicing, and we're looking at kind of some disciplines in our life to live the Christian life in a better way. So last time I talked, the message was living with margin, and we talked about how important it is to create space in our life to be non-productive. Now, for some people, maybe that's not your problem. Maybe you need to create space to work, but that's another message, and we'll get to. But how important it is for us to put in space in our life to rest and on a regular basis. So we looked at the Old Testament, the idea of Sabbath, but then we also looked at, hey, under the New Testament, it's not a requirement, you know, that for the new covenant to keep Sabbath. However, it is a good way to fight the idolatry of our culture. Now, you don't hear that word idolatry tossed around probably at your water cooler that much, but back in Old Testament times, idol worship, people would worship idols, they'd worship other gods, and it was represented as like a statue. And actually, the psalmist once wrote, he said, those who make idols, those who worship idols are going to become like them. They're going to have eyes, but they're not going to see. They're going to have ears, but not be able to hear. They're going to lose their sensitivity to life. A New Testament scholar, N.T. Wright, once said, you will become like that which you worship. And that's true. And so in our modern world, if we're worshiping productivity, if we're looking to our own productivity to kind of be our God, like our security, our happiness, guess what? You're going to begin getting your identity in your job. Have you ever known somebody who's got their identity in their job before? Maybe you've been that way. Probably if we ask that question, we get a lot of hands. I know. I think we all struggle with that. And sometimes we think, I am my job. And you see people sometimes, they retire. All of a sudden, they don't have a job anymore, and their life is thrown into chaos. What am I apart from my job? Well, part of keeping downtime in our week, setting aside time to step away from work, is acknowledging that my identity is in God. Work is important, but I'm not my work. So we're fighting against the idolatry of our world by taking time off in every week. And so this also means materialism and greed and all that stuff. We're fighting against that by deliberately saying, God, we trust you with our lives enough to step aside and realize that the world goes on even when I rest. So that's just the recap, the previously at North Shore Vineyard. So today we did living with margin. Today we're going to do loving with margin. That's clever, isn't it? I came up with that about 10:30 last night. loving with margin. And the first text that I want to look at today is Leviticus 23, verse 22. Now, again, this is when God was giving the parameters of the old covenant to the children of Israel. He says this, when you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner among you. I am the Lord your God. Now, I want you to realize how radical these words were. These words were written close to 3,500 years ago, a long time ago. Now, here's a little a little bit of the climate that was existing in the world. At that time, you had nations like China, Egypt. You had empires beginning to run up, to rise up. And if you were an empire or an emperor and you wanted something done like the Great Wall of China built or a pyramid, what did you do? You just forced a lot of people to be slaves. And you're going to use them until they die, and you're going to use up all the resources. And that was just kind of the way the world was. If you were fortunate enough to not live in an empire or at least to have your own little plot of land, your mentality would be that I'm getting what's mine. I'm going to get every bit of this. And it's in that climate that God comes and introduces these laws about not using the corners of your land and not picking up 100% of your harvest. Now, I was talking with a lady recently that goes to our church, and she's just started reading the Bible for the first time, and she said, look, I bought a Bible, and I just started going through the book of Genesis, and she's like, that's crazy stuff. Like, it's just weird, you know? It's strange. And it is, right? You know, kind of reading, there's a lot of strange stuff in the Bible. I think if that's one of the reasons we can tell that it might have been inspired by God and not human beings, because I think me and you might have left some of the stuff out, you know? Like, can we give a little bit different version of this? But understand, the Old Testament law, as crazy as some of the laws might seem, it was actually elevating people into a different place from what was going around in the culture around them. So this may seem like, you know, kind of not that big of a deal, but God was actually elevating them. All the other nations of the world, they always worked to get everything they could to squeeze it out. And God says, no, as my people, you're going to be different. You're not going to use 100% of your resources for yourself. You're always going to keep in mind those who don't have all their needs met around you. Now, that's a pretty radical idea, isn't it? Would you agree? Well, think if we did things like this today. Think if you didn't use 100% of your income. Now, you may not right now, but think of what the climate of our world would be like if every business in America and every working individual in America didn't use 100% of what they make. Say we learn how to live on 90%. You think that might change things dramatically in our world? I mean, right now you've got businesses trying to find loopholes, ways they can get out of taxes. You got people who are, you know, some people give, some people don't. But what if every person in this country set aside 5% of their income, not for themselves, but for people who need it, for the poor? I think if that were the case, I don't think we'd be having debates about Social Security and Medicaid and all that stuff. I think every need in America would be taken care of. Now, obviously, the government's trying to do that, and I'm not here to talk politics, okay? But this is an idea from God, that don't work the way other people do, where you got to squeeze every last penny, every last bit from your resources. Leave the corners. Leave it for the poor and for the foreigners. They would learn how to live on less than the whole. The poor in their midst would have provision. And this is one of these places in the Old Testament where we see that being in relationship with God always involves our relationships with others. You know, I remember when I first became a Christian. Maybe you've had this thought occur to you before. You ever think, like, it would be a lot easier to be a Christian if I didn't have to be in relationship with people? You ever thought that before? Like, I could really be good at this Christianity stuff if I was a monk. If I could just be by myself, me and God, man, I wouldn't have a problem with anger or impatience or anything like that. I could really do this thing. But we're seeing, even in the Old Testament, Leviticus here, we see that our relationship with God is always connected to our relationship with other people. You know, the Apostle John actually wrote it like this in John, 1 John 4, 20-21. Whoever claims to love God and yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he's given us this command: anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister. You know, I remember when I was like probably about 16 years old, living out in Midland, Texas, and it was crazy because the Ku Klux Klan decided to come to town one time. And that was big news for Midland, Texas. I mean, you know, we didn't get stuff like that there. The Ku Klux Klan shows up, and then there was a gang that showed up to assassinate the Ku Klux Klan. So it was like crazy stuff. And the cops all showed up and snipers. And they had a rally at a public park. And I was with the high school newspaper, so I went out there to take pictures. And you know what blew me away? I wasn't following God at the time, but they actually, on their PA system, they had worship songs. Songs that I remember from when I was a kid in church. Like, I recognized some of the songs. And they were talking about Jesus. But yet they were holding up signs that were like the most hateful, awful things you could imagine. Now, what does John say about this? They're liars. They don't love God. Why? Because they hate people. And we can find in the Old Testament, we can find in the New Testament, that you can't love God in a vacuum. You can't just say, I love God, but I'm not a big fan of those people that live over there, or these people that act like that, or this race, or this ethnicity. Our love for God is proved by our relationships with other people. So I want to look at this idea, and I want us to hold a couple of things in our mind as we go on. Here's two questions. What would it mean to create margin in our lives, not just for our own sake, but for the sake of others? What would it mean to live in a reality where you've got money, resources, maybe even time set aside, not just for you and your family, but for other people? Second thing, what would it mean to live our lives in such a way that we actually had something to give those in need when they actually needed it? Sometimes we got something to give people in need, but not when they need it. Sometimes when they actually need something, we're scratching our heads. Let's look at the New Testament here. Luke chapter 10, verse 25 through 37. This is the parable of the Good Samaritan. Just then, a religion scholar stood up with a question to test Jesus. Teacher, what do I need to do to get eternal life? And he answered, what's written in God's law? How do you interpret it? And he said, that you love the Lord your God with all your passion and prayer and muscle and intelligence, and that you love your neighbor as well as you do yourself. Good answer, said Jesus. Do it and you live. But looking for a loophole, he asked, and just how would you define neighbor? Do you ever find yourself trying to look for loopholes with God? How far do I really have to love Jesus? I mean, let's define what is. What is neighbor? What is neighbor? Jesus answers his question by telling a story. There once was a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. On the way, he was attacked by robbers. They took his clothes and beat him up and went off, leaving him half dead. Luckily, a priest was on his way down the same road, but when he saw him, he angled across to the other side. Then a Levite, a religious man, showed up. He also avoided the injured man. A Samaritan traveling down the road came on him, and when he saw the man's condition, his heart went out to him. He gave him first aid, disinfecting and bandaging his wounds. Then he lifted him onto his donkey, led him to an inn, and made him comfortable. In the morning, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, "Take good care of him, and if it costs any more, put it on my bill. I'll pay you on my way back." What do you think? Which of these three became the neighbor to the man who was attacked by the robbers? The one who treated him kindly, the religion scholar responded. Jesus said, go and do the same. So who is the neighbor in this story? The Samaritan, right. Now, we kind of miss the scandal of this passage here as modern day Americans. We see, oh, the Samaritan, he was a good guy, and we just don't kind of realize what's going on. Probably if Jesus were telling this story in modern day America, instead of a Samaritan, he'd probably use a Muslim fundamentalist. You know, they're not real popular in our culture these days, you know? And then instead of a priest and a Levite, they would be patriotic, flag waving, religious Americans. The scandal of this was the Samaritan is the good guy. And the priest and the Levite, those were the guys in full-time ministry. Those were the guys that hung out at the temple. They're the bad guys in this story. The Samaritan in that culture, the Jews and the Samaritans, they didn't get along good at all. The Jews looked down on them. They thought they were very racist towards them. They thought, you know, these are half-breed. You know, they're not really Jewish. They're kind of mixed race. Their religion is a bastardized form of Judaism, it's not pure, they believe all kinds of weird things, but yet the guy who doesn't even have things figured out in his beliefs, the guy who's living outside of the true covenant people, he's the guy who actually gets it. It's scandalous. What is Jesus saying here? He's saying it's possible to get so caught up in religion, like the priest and the Levite, and yet you miss the point of it. You miss that loving God isn't just about going to church. It's not just about memorizing the scriptures. It's not just about attending Bible studies. It's actually evidenced by doing something for those who are in need. The Samaritan is the one who reaches out to the one who is in need. What we also find out in this is that the way Jesus, oftentimes we see the parable of the Samaritan, and we forget that it's the answer to a question, right? What was the question? Who is my neighbor? Well, who is my neighbor? It's anyone that I come across that is hurting and that's beat up. Who's my neighbor? Anyone. How far do I have to love? Only as far as there's hurting people that cross your path. That's as far as you have to. That's it. You just love the people God puts in your path. And what does that love look like? Well, it looks like for this guy putting a wounded person on his donkey, giving him first aid, taking him to an inn, making sure his bills are taken care of. You know, one thing, this story would have been quite different if the Samaritan didn't actually have a little margin in his life, right? If he didn't have a donkey, if he didn't have some money or first aid, he probably wouldn't have been able to do so much. He's actually in a place of being able to help. The Samaritan had resources to respond when the need presented itself. I think a lot of times in Christianity, I've found in my own journey, sometimes we just want to kind of go with the flow and be very spiritual in the moment with God. Like I used to have this band called Mary's Den, and we loved leading worship and being like spontaneous. We thought it was unspiritual if we actually had a worship set put together. Like, oh, you can't just like put a set together and go out there. You got to feel it in the moment. You got to feel what God's doing and then do those songs like right in the moment. And that worked okay for us. We played for like 6 years together. And so we could do anything like that. But I remember when I came on staff at a church having to lead worship, and like all of a sudden now I'm working with 30 different musicians and you can't just like go with the flow. And I remember talking to a pastor friend of mine. I was like, man, it's so hard to follow God, you know, in the moment and hear from God in the moment, you know, when you got, and he's like, well, don't you think God could tell you what to do a week before you get there? I'm like, what? No, you have to hear God in the moment. He's like, well, how about hearing God in a moment 7 days before you get there? Well, that just doesn't feel right. Well, I find, and this is the tension of disciplines in our life, in the Christian life, that we want to live a disciplined life, not just for this moment, but that so we have something to give when the moment calls for it. The Samaritan, he was actually at a place where he could respond to the needs right in the moment. He could actually do what God was up to. He could participate with what God wanted to do in the moment because he actually had created margin in his life to do that. Let's look at another story. This is an actual ministry story from Jesus. This is Matthew 14, 13 through 21. This is the story of the feeding of the 5,000. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by a boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." And Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, and he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people, and they all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 baskets full of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men besides the women and children. I love this story. I love it because it tells us something about God and how God works. You realize Jesus he didn't have to ask the disciples for anything. He could have just said, "Oh, there's hungry people here? Great. boom, and there could have been like this massive like banquet table, and they could have just had a party. But what's he do? Hey, Jesus, look, you know, we've been traveling all day. Me and the disciples are kind of hungry. Why don't you send the crowds away so they can go get something to eat? And Jesus says, no, you give them something to eat. You give them something to eat. And they're like, well, Jesus, I mean, look, we got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And, you know, we got 12 disciples. We got you. Those are some pretty small fish sandwiches as it is. We got like Woodstock out here, you know, thousands of people who are hanging out, wanting to hear you. You give them something to eat. This is a brilliant picture of how God gets things done. You know, the Apostle Paul would later write in the book of Corinthians that we are the body of Christ. We are his hands, his feet, his mouth. We're his representation on earth. It's kind of scary, huh? God doesn't get things done apart from us. He involves us. He invites us to be participants in his kingdom work. He leaves the work of the kingdom into our hands to partner, to find out what God's up to bring our sack lunch. And then he touches it. You know, several years ago, I was a campus pastor at SLU over in Hammond. And I had bought my first guitar. It was a Martin. And Martin's a good guitar. I bought like the lowest end Martin that you could get because you can spend as much money on a Martin guitar as you want. And I spent about $500, which for a college student, that was a lot of money. And I bought this guitar and I took it on a missions trip overseas to Poland and Budapest and Amsterdam. And I led worship with it at our campus ministry meetings over at SLU. And I used it all kinds of places. But a year after I got the guitar, we got a phone call from a group of campus, from another campus ministry up in Michigan, and they had been driving through Hammond late at night on I-12 on their route to some kind of ministry trip, and the guy who was driving the van fell asleep, and the van went off into the median, flipped a couple of times, and they were messed up. Nobody died. Nobody was seriously injured. Miraculously, they were all in one piece. But they showed up at our campus ministry house right next to SLU the next day. And I remember we gathered around them and we prayed for them. Actually, one of them, their back was healed right there on the spot. That was pretty cool. But as we're praying for them, as we're talking with them, I look over and I see this guitar that was in the van with them, and it was just, the top was cracked open, had holes in it, and as a musician, you're like, that's so sad. It's sad you got your back hurt, but did you see that guitar? No. And I remember in that moment feeling God say, why don't you give him your guitar? I was like, no, Lord, get behind me. No. I was not a well-off college student. I didn't have like a lot of extra money laying around. I didn't have extra guitars. I had one acoustic guitar. That was it. And I felt like God in that moment said, I'm inviting you to participate with what I'm doing. Why don't you give your guitar to these people who just lost theirs? I'm like, okay. So I gave the guitar to this guy. And I kind of thought that was the end of the story. He was very appreciative. He's, oh, thank you so much. You didn't have to do that. I was like, no, really. I want you to have it. And I thought that was kind of the end of it. Well, a couple of years later, I bump into this guy, and he tells me, he went back up to Michigan, but he ended back in down in this area. He goes, hey, man, remember that guitar you gave me? I was like, yeah. He said, well, down the road, I bumped into a girl who, she needed a guitar, and I gave it to her. A couple of years after that, I heard that this girl had given that guitar to somebody else. This one little guitar that was in a living room of a campus ministry ended up going all over the world. It may still be going all over the world today. I don't know. But if this guitar could talk, it would have some stories to tell. It had been in different countries. It had been at different worship gatherings. And I'm thinking, you know, I had no idea. I thought I was just helping this guy out, but it just kept going. And I'll just say that is a small thing that, you know, for me, I was invited to participate in what God was doing. It was sacrificial, though. It was my only guitar. It's not like I had extra guitars lying around. It was it. But I got to be a part of something much bigger than just my life. God actually took this guitar and now it's been used to lead worship for thousands of people all over the world, different continents. Who knows? It may still be going down the road. But I think that that's part of what God invites us to, is to be a part of what he's doing. Sometimes we have margins set aside in our life, and obviously we need to shoot for living that way. Sometimes it's a sacrifice. But I can tell you, there's very few places where God has gotten my attention over the years as when it comes to giving. You with me? When you give sacrificially, those are kind of some ways where God can really get your attention, probably as much as when you see miracles sometimes. You know what happened with this guitar after I gave it away and it began its journey out of Louisiana and to various sundry places? 3 weeks after, I think we might have been hanging out with Dan and Paulette. There was a group of people we were hanging out with on the South Shore, me and Dana. It was before we got married. We were dating, and we were hanging out with a crew of people. And one night, this guy comes up to me. I didn't even know him. I think I'd met him that night. And he comes up to me and says, "Look, I don't know why, but I feel like God put it on my heart to give you a check for $500. I'm like, "What?" I knew exactly what I was going to spend that check on. Going to get another guitar. The cool thing for me is that I even got blessed. I ended up getting a better guitar than what I got before. And that's what I see with even the disciples. They had a sack lunch. They weren't even going to be eating good on what they had, the 12 of them. But when they gave that thing to Jesus, Jesus not only feeds them, but he feeds thousands of people. I think part of dealing with some of these stressors in our life, some of the things that wear us out, is that we are not even paying attention to what God's doing. We're so caught up by the stress of our job and the economy and the anxiety of the age that we're missing what God is up to. And sometimes God is putting people right in our path and he's saying, "What are you going to do? Are you going to give of what you have? Maybe you've got something set aside. Are you going to participate with what I'm doing?" Giving is one of the most amazing ways that we experience being in relationship with God. As Acts 20:35 says, a quote of Jesus, "It's more blessed to give than to receive." You know, giving that guitar away that time, I got more blessed than, it was just much more blessed than if I would have kept it. And I've seen that time and time again, but it's never easy to give. Sacrificially, at least. And I think God is calling us, if we're going to live with margin, that we create space in our life, not just for ourselves, we don't just set aside money in our budget to get a new boat or a new flat screen TV or new this or that, but we live in such a way that we set aside money, space, time, even some of our possessions for those who are in need. So I want us to wrestle with a few questions in the coming week. Number one, how can I consistently set aside more of my resources for those who are in need? I mean, maybe this morning you've never even thought about, like, actually in your budget having a line item of just money for other people. That might not be a bad thing to try. And again, maybe some of you in here, I know people are getting hit hard by the economy. Some people don't have jobs. But I'll tell you, even if you're really down and out right now, I mean, even if it's $2, I'm going to take $2 every 2 weeks and set it aside. And I'm just going to set it aside until I come across somebody who needs to be blessed. But I think for those of you who have jobs and consistent income, why not revisit your budget and say, what can we do to set aside spending for other people who are in need? I've mentioned this, but years ago, Dina and I, for the first 8 years of being a Christian, we gave out of compulsion all the time. We were trying to be blessed, trying not to be cursed, and it was miserable. And finally, one day, I opted out of that. I told Dina, I was like, "We're not doing that anymore. We're going to participate with what God's doing." We began praying, "God, what are you doing? How do you want to involve us? Show us where we can give." And guess what? God began showing us where we could give. And I tell you, I'm ruined for anything else. I don't want to just give out of not, you know, superstition anymore. It's so much better to experience God in the midst of that. So how can I consistently set aside more of my resources for those who are in need? Secondly, what steps do I need to take to free up more of my resources for the needs of others? Financial classes, disciplined giving, getting out of debt. I know there's some people in here, maybe, man, I would love to be like the Good Samaritan and be able to respond, but man, I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. I get that. I've been there. I think one of the most frustrating things as a Christian is when you are presented with needs and you've been living on debt so long, you've got nothing. You can't even pay your own bills. Well, there's people here at our church that would love, I mean, we've got people that know more about money than I do. I don't know much about it. Know how to spend it. But we got people here in our church that are good with money and good with investing and helping people get out of debt. And if that's you, that you need some help, look, I can hook you up with some people that can meet with you, look at your finances, help you get a way out so you can start living with more margin. Are there any places today where you sense that God is calling you as the disciples to give sacrificially from the little you have? I find there's sometimes where, man, when I say giving sacrificially, it hurts sometimes to give. But I can tell you, every time I've given sacrificially, I've gotten more blessed. It hurts. It's hard to get past, like, yeah, I kind of had plans for this money myself, God. I kind of wanted to keep this thing. I kind of, was hoping we could do this. But I think we need to at least start opening ourselves up to the possibility that, hey, maybe God even wants us to not just set aside money for others, but to maybe we got to hurt a little sometimes. Not because that makes us happy, but because we step into a whole new realm of participation with God. So loving with margin. Why don't you stand up? I'll close this in the word.
Let me be an example of your love in the way that you take care of me. Let me step in for someone in need. You like to charge our hearts. I've got a heart that needs charging. I'm running far and running fast. Where's the finish line? You like to save the day. I've got a day that needs saving. I know you've come through in the past. I'm asking one more time. Show me you mean it when you say we should be leaving. Even before our prayers are said, you're working to answer them. Show me what the king does with a servant in the kingdom.